Welcome to the History Reviewed channel, where we analyze the lies and deceptions of history. Just a note, this interview that you're about to listen to that I did with Bryza, for some reason that I do not understand, I can't get the last 24 minutes of the interview out of the original saved file. So the interview that you're going to listen to is 1 hour and 50 minutes long, but it did carry on for another 24 minutes afterwards, but I just can't recover it. So it'll just end abruptly, and I'm afraid I don't know how the file got damaged.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Bryza Show with me, Bryza, at grismbot.blogspot.com, where Mammy welcomes you to the best news aggregate site on the World Wide Web. It's good to have your company, folks, and if you'd like to join us in the chat room, click on the HTML5 chat link on the top right-hand side of the page, just below the player of your choice. I'd also like to welcome listeners to Eurofolk Radio. Good to have you all aboard. And I'd also like to make it clear to all listening that I reserve all rights to my words, as do my guests. So welcome, everybody. It's Monday, 16th of August, 2021, and the world continues to get crazier and crazier. I hope you're doing well wherever you are. Just a few things before we get into the show. We all know about the situation with Graham Hart. And I can give you an address for you if you want to write to him, you can do that. But also our good friend Alison Chablot. I've had her on the show quite a few times, but she's been hounded as well by the same people that went after Graham. And she was in prison there back in May, I think it was, for about 9 weeks, April, May, and then she got out in early June. And she was appealing one of her cases, and I don't know the actual full details because it kind of got a bit complicated there. But she was out, and then she obviously went through the appeal process, and she was in court twice last week. I think it was on Tuesday and Friday. And unfortunately, her appeal was thrown out. And she was remanded in custody till today, which was where she was going to be sentenced now. I don't know. I haven't got any updates on what happened there, what her sentence is or anything. I was looking around the various news sites and everything. I couldn't find anything. So we'll probably know tomorrow or something. It could have been adjourned as well. We don't know. So I'll as soon as we know, we'll get the word out. But there you know, another one has been. You know, these people are relentless. They just won't stop, will they? So With regards to Graham, you can write to Graham at, I'll give you his address. So it's Graham Hart. Prisoner number is A for Apple, 3536, E for Edward, and Q for Q. HMP Exeter, 30 New North Road, Exeter, and the postcode EX44EX, United Kingdom. And you can also, I believe you can email him as well. You have to go onto a website called emailaprisoner.com. And if you follow the instructions there and put the details in, you can send an email to Graham as well. So that's, you know, if you want to go down that way. Not sure how secure that is, but, you know, again, it's up to yourselves. I prefer the old-fashioned way of a card or a letter. I think it's a lot better when people get them, you know. So, folks, please send all what you can. Send some cards, letters, everything into him, and because he needs a bit of cheering up and a bit of you know, support. He's gone through a tough time. I was in contact with his daughter, Shelley, over the weekend, and he's really struggling because of the medications that he's on. He had a bit of a turn there on the weekend. He was hallucinating, I believe, and kind of recalling something that his father had said to him, but his father's long dead, of course. So very strange. It's kind of very concerning as well. Now, they managed to calm him down, and I think they will be looking at moving him to Dartmoor Prison, which is also in Devon. It's not far, well, it's not too far from Exeter. Dartmoor, I remember back in the day, used to have a pretty bad reputation. It was where the hardened criminals used to go. But I believe they've cleaned up their image there big time, and it's a lot quieter and nicer place to be now. So hopefully Graham will they'll get a place for Graham in there, and he'll be able to deal with the situation a lot better, and he'll get, you know, proper access to his medications. So yeah, that's the situation at the moment. So again, please, as much support. And I ask as well, if you are sending letters and cards in, please, no political or controversial stuff, okay? Because first of all, he probably won't get it. They'll bin that, okay? So it'll be a waste of time. Secondly, just all I think he really needs now is messages of support and encouragement, and that, you know, there's a lot of people outside who are thinking about him and are wishing him well. So that's why I just ask, please, if you do that. So with all that said, I would like to welcome my guest tonight. He's been on before many times, and a good friend is down in South Africa there. It's Jan Lamprecht, historyreview.com is his website. A lot of things have been going down in South Africa lately too, and of course we're here now with all this stuff going on in Afghanistan, so it's and then with all the COVID scandemic stuff going on too, man, it's just crazy stuff. So Jan, welcome to the show, how are you?
Hi there, Bryza. Thank you very much for having me back on the show. It's awesome to be on your show again.
Great. So how are things with you? Would you want any comments on the Graham and Alison situation yourself? What do you think?
You know, these people, once they've got you in their sights, they don't let you go. And I think, you know, I think especially Alison, it looks like they are so determined to destroy her. And they won't, there's nothing they'll stop at. And the legal stuff is very, very tricky. And in the past, when I did shows with her, I tried to understand some of her legal things. But to be honest with you, I didn't really understand it properly. And legal is a very, very tricky world. But I do worry for her. I'm absolutely shocked. I was so happy to hear 2 weeks ago that she'd gotten out towards the end of May, and now this again. And to me, it's almost like it's contempt of court or something, that she's done something against the court orders, and that's the dangerous thing. You can't go against your court orders. Mm-hmm. That's jail time straight off. But you know, the thing for them is, I was watching a video yesterday by another guy, and this is a Lithuanian American, and he was talking about his experiences with Jews and what he what he'd concluded about them. And you know, these Jews, I must tell you that this stuff of racism that we whites don't take too seriously, for Jews, racism and these things is a matter of life and death. For them, and the Lithuanian was saying something that I've been thinking for a long time, is that Jews want, this may sound crazy, but Jews want to be in white society. They want to be in the Western world. They will not, all those expulsions and things in the past, Jews will not tolerate that. Jews want to be in white society. Why? Because this is where they succeed the most. They make tons of money. They get all kinds of things that they can't get in other ways. And so for them, it's critical for them to convince whites that they have a role to play in the Western world. And I tell you, when I look at some of the things that go on, and some of these leaders of the West, like I was watching something where who's that idiot clown Boris, who's the prime minister of Britain? Yes, but and he was saying, oh, nobody can accuse me. You know, I have fought more for the banks than anybody. And you know, when I look at these people, I must tell you that I think that Jews go to great lengths to fool whites, and there is no end to how they are basically just fucking with the heads of people who they push up and turn into their puppets, and the people that they turn against the real whites. Let's call it that, because Jews basically are dividing. Jews are dividing white society everywhere, and they divide whites against themselves and then set their attack dogs against the genuine whites. And I must tell you that these issues for Jews, this is a matter of life and death, literally. And that is why they cannot allow anybody in the slightest way to get any decent message out, because they know that they are lying, they know that they are at fault, but they have their goals of, they are like an insistent parasite. They will parasite off you whether you like it or not. And it's almost like Jews claim that they have a right to parasitism, a universal right to parasite off whoever they want to parasite off. And for them, this stuff is not a joke, because they know that this can, they know from past experience, whites can and will kick them out, and they are not willing to tolerate it. So for them, it's literally a state of war. It's literally a state of war, and they will do anything to destroy us. And it's shocking. And of course, the ones who are fooled, they don't even know what's going on. And I must tell you that there are days when I sit and ask myself the question, many of these people, most of these whites who are, let's say, on the side of the Jews, I wonder if even the cleverest and highest ranking among them really even realize that Jews are just fucking with their heads, to be honest with you. That Jews have fooled them, that they've been lied to and fooled. I think that they successfully have fooled almost everybody, even professors, even economists, you name it. I think that they've genuinely fooled vast numbers of whites who are pro-Jew. That if those people had a bit of time to think and could just see the facts clearly, they would realize, man, these people fooled me. I think that's the way I see it.
I'll give you a good example of that, Jan, is Jeremy Corbyn, okay? He was the leader of the British Labour Party. So he was a very, very high-ranking politician in the UK. He also ran for prime minister in the last election, and the CIA came after him. Now that's astounding, isn't it, when you think of it? And I've just seen as well, they've gone after a very well-known playwright in Britain, Ken Loach, very left-wing guy. But he kind of, you know, has these issues with the Jewish system, you know, the Jews, what's definitely going on in Israel and Palestine, that type of thing. But again, he won't, he's got his own opinions on the alleged Holocaust as well, right? And he won't kind of come out and admit that. So they're going after him. They managed to get the Labour Party to expel him. He was a member of the Labour Party. They managed to get people within the Labour Party to expel him as well. So they're really even going after the left wing as well. Anybody who criticizes them, doesn't matter what side of the political spectrum you are on, if you say anything bad, yes, they'll come after you. You know, and again, to come after people like, you know, Alison and Graham, who are just musicians, who put out a couple of videos, went on a few radio shows, and said things which they didn't like, and they come after you using the full weight of the system, the legal system, and the courts and whatever, and the police. I mean, it's astounding how they can get away with it. What other group out there could do that? You know?
Yeah. You see, it shows also how vulnerable they are, and I think that we don't realize how close. Let me put it another way. Whites are closer to victory than whites realize, and Jews know that. And Jews know that if somebody even in jest gets away with it, Alison's satirical songs, that even if you get if you just plant the seed of the idea, that may be too much already. Jews are very cognizant of their weaknesses, and that's why they're going after people like crazy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well,
and I think it'll only get worse, you know. But times are getting very wild now, and I'm liking it a lot. I'm liking it a lot, really. I think I must tell you, Bryza, I think we are heading into times of war. I think war is coming in our lifetime, and I can't wait for it, to be honest with you. I want to see an end to this liberal system. I'm sick to death of the lies. The lies are just unbelievable. But people are catching it out left, right, and center now at a pace like you can't believe. Yeah. So I'm very happy.
Yeah, well, I do think something is coming down the tracks. I can kind of even almost feel it, so the energy around me, you know, that something is happening. And I think even particular with this whole scandemic, what they're pushing here as well, they're really pushing at businesses and everything to introduce these vaccine passports and all the rest of it. And okay, to say that, you know, I do see a lot of people tend to going along with it, but then I'm seeing a lot of other people going, hold on a minute now. You know, I think people have a kind of a high threshold, you know, when it comes to kind of taking, how do I say this? They will put up with a lot. People will put up with an awful lot of bullshit and nonsense for a while, but then eventually it's going to go, right, sorry, line in the sand here, that's it. And when that happens, whoa, then it's going to kick off, you know?
I think, Bryza, when I look, you know, I'm constantly posting on my website and reading stuff from people and looking at things and reading articles, watching videos. And I can tell you that I've never seen things as crazy on the internet as it is now. And I mean, it's wild. And I see all kinds of things that show me that every different group is busy doing something. I was looking at another website where people can support creators of content. And I saw that website had been banned by PayPal. And then I saw the other day that MailChimp has been banning people. And so Jews are busy shutting down everything, even things that are quite tame. They're shutting down everything that's quite tame. YouTube, I look at YouTube. YouTube's selection of videos is becoming worse and worse.
Oh,
all
yeah.
the kinds of historical documentary stuff I used to get, all gone. And I'm even seeing repeats constantly. I see same videos appearing on the things, which shows me that they don't have the selections they used to have. But the most important is to watch the different people coming out. And I mean, like COVID. I told people a year ago, I said to them, COVID's going to be good for us. And I think I've been proven dead right on that one. I've never seen so many doctors, nurses, freaking scientists coming out. I mean, they're coming out everywhere, left, right, and center, every country, even Britain. And they're just ripping into the system. And now we've got this this stupid passport thing, which I think it's beyond belief. I can't believe that we can accept that. And another thing that I must tell you, I'm forming the opinion about COVID. I was listening to various doctors, and I'm forming the opinion that the way that they've handled COVID, they are actually busy setting this for worse viruses to come. We're going to get worse viruses that are going to really kill people. And the other thing is, I still think that these vaccines can sterilize people possibly. Whole thing of COVID alone, I think could cause a world war once this thing gets out. You know, it's like COVID is surrounded by Jews as well, hey?
The big pharma companies who are producing the vaccines, all the CEOs are Jewish, every one of them. You know, or definitely have links, you know, they might be fully Jewish, but they're certainly on board, you know. They're all Pfizer, Moderna, AstraZeneca, the three big ones, Johnson & Johnson as well. So, and then if you look at particularly in the US, the Center for Disease Control, the top people in there, they're all Jewish as well. So it's, they're certainly playing a major part. And a lot of the vaccine research and development was done in Israel too. So,
I saw a video where a Jew wearing his kippah was boasting that all the vaccines that have come out have been the main scientists have been Jews. So yeah, you know, I think that this whole COVID thing, nothing has stirred people up like COVID, and rightfully so. COVID has been.
Well, I think it needed something like that, Jan, because you know we've been banging our heads for years and years trying to wake people up to what's going on in the world, right? And you know, it's we've had an impact, but it's still been very, very small. But the COVID stuff has woken up so many people now, you know, all across the world. I mean, if you look at what's going on in France at the moment, right? The French are kicking off big time there now, right? And the Italians as well, which is great to see. And this is, we need more of this.
Excellent.
Yeah. And they're having none of it, okay? And I can see, I look at Macron there, that guy's shitting in his boots. I'm telling you that now, because they'll drag him out of that.
Excellent.
He's presidential palace, and you're going to see a kind of, might we see a French-type revolution again, 2.0, you know, off with our heads type of thing. It's very interesting times, very interesting times. And as I said, we just have to kind of roll with this and see where it all brings us. And as long as we remain strong within ourselves, we can get through this, you know. And if we need to defend ourselves, we'll defend ourselves. That's it. I mean, I'm not going to go, you know, anyone comes near me with a jab or forces me to do that, I'll use whatever means necessary to defend myself. That's it. So, and I think it's a lot of people are like that now. They're saying, no way, you know, and they're coming after the kids as well. And people say, no, the actual lies, they said, well, children aren't going to be affected by this anyway. And so we only give it to the elderly people, or maybe to the people over 50 years old or something like that. But now they're coming after it to be to 12 and 18 year olds. They're trying to introduce that in Ireland now. Plus now they're even looking at injecting them now when babies are born. I mean, come on. This has gone too far now, and people are going to just
Whoa.
Say, yeah. And they're also going after pregnant women too, right? So, and the end result of that is going to be, of course, a lot of miscarriages, you know? So I think, as I said, like all things, John, things have to get a lot worse before they get better. So we have to kind of get on this roller coaster ride, buckle in, and get through it. It's going to be a rocky road. But I think we'll come out at the end, we'll come out standing at the end.
Riza, I think so as well. And when we discuss the South Africa stuff, you'll see that worse is better. I'm very happy with the things that I've seen lately. And I say, let's go over the cliff, eh?
Yeah.
It's the only way. Otherwise, we just sit in the same space that we've been sitting for the last 20, 30, 40, 50 years,
mm-hmm.
And that's a waste of time.
Yeah. Yeah, I think there's
there is
big momentum now. And we just have to keep that going. And it's going to get bigger and bigger. The more they push this on us, the more pushback they're going to get, Now, I know it's difficult for some people, they look all around them and there's zombies, mass zombies all over the place, and they just going along with the whole thing. But there are an awful lot of people out there who do know exactly what's going on and will not accept it one way at all. Simple as that. Again, drawing the line in the sand. And as you said, the COVID thing really was what was needed, because it's the basic stuff, isn't it? It's affecting people at a very basic level, like your health, and then also if you've got a business or a livelihood, that you've lost your job now, you can't pay your bills anymore. We're also seeing families now being split down the middle, husbands and wives arguing over stuff like that. And people then realize, why are we arguing over this? We've been married 30, 40 years, and we're going to get divorced because you want a job and I don't. And I've seen an actual example of that happen in my town here. So, this is going to give at some point. It really is. And I think we just have to keep going and don't lose, stay strong through all of this. We'll come through it, And it could get very ugly, but, we're ready for it now. So we know the situation. They are coming after us. They have said, depopulation is on the agenda, and they're going after the white folks first, And, come, let's go. Let's do it then. Come after us and see what happens. That's the way I look at it.
Riza, I think I totally agree with you, definitely. And, the right, the white right, has for years and years been battling on the internet. And in many ways, we've actually created a lot of the things that have given other whites, like with this COVID stuff, the sort of inspiration for them to now come out with their stuff. And they are piggybacking on existing platforms. So the white right has actually also laid the groundwork that's helped to make this happen more. I can see it through the websites that are supporting it. And you can see where the videos are going up, etc. Mm-hmm. People are banned off YouTube, but they're going on to all the video platforms that the white right has created, and white right and white conservatives. So we've done good stuff.
Oh, we have. And then just today, I've just noticed, and a lot of the people in the chat will have noticed on the Grism website, the Mammy's website, all the posts from the middle of July onwards have all been deleted. That site must have been hacked or something. They took down everything. And one of the posts was about Graham, what happened to him. We just put up the article from the Cornwall Live newspaper about what happened to Graham. Obviously, there's a lot of comments in there. And I'm not sure whether that was the reason why all these posts were deleted. I don't know. But something very strange happened there today. I was looking at the posts and I thought, I recall that, you know, seeing that ages ago, and then I looked, they were all from July. So everything from mid-July till now was deleted on the Grism website, you know. So it looks like they hacked us and took out stuff. They took out everything that was put in there. So maybe we're on the kind of target list now as well, you know. But yeah, again, come on, that's not going to stop us.
Well, my websites are constantly being attacked, and I have had serious hackings in the last year. So make no mistake, they're trying everything. No, this, you know what, Graham, in the end, I've said it before, but in the end, you'll see that you cannot talk everything through. You cannot. And the only time you can do it is if both sides are reasonable, but the other side is showing how unreasonable they are. And the Jews themselves have to be as unreasonable as possible, because their existence, or they see it as their existence being on the line. They want to live in the Western world and have access to everything in the Western world. I remember a couple of years ago when in Hungary, I think it was in Hungary, the people were quite anti-Semitic. And the next thing you saw was the Jews are complaining about anti-Semitism in Hungary. And the next thing you hear is the World Jewish Council, or whatever it's called, suddenly says they are going to have a meeting in the capital city of Hungary. Mm-hmm. So when the Jews see that there's anti-Semitism, the Jews go there because they want those people to know that they want access to Hungary. So even when they know that they're not wanted and not liked, they go there. That is the critical thing for the Jews. They need, the Jews are like ticks that need to get on a cow. The cow doesn't want the tick on him, but the tick insists that he wants to get on the cow because that's where he's going to be doing some feeding. That is the nature of the struggle with these people.
Well, yeah, this is what we're up against, so we know, you know, we just have to deal with it. Poor old Graham and Alice, unfortunately, have seen what they can do, and we just hope that they can get through it. I'm kind of, as I said, I'm concerned about Graham because of his health and the medication that he needs, and the other fact, if he doesn't get, you know, if he misses out a day or two, he starts hallucinating. I mean, that's not good, you know. And it's his mental health I'm kind of worried about, that if he comes out, even if he does get out after a year or even 10 months, you know, he's going to, he mightn't be too right in the head after it. That's my main concern here. But they don't care.
Surely.
Yeah.
Are you serious? They don't care about, surely that is like an infringement of his
Well,
rights.
It would be, yeah, it is, you know, but I think.
What about his attorney?
Because he's on the strong medication, which is opioids, right? So they're obviously concerned that if he takes too many of them, that he could, you know, take his life type of thing, which is not great. We'd not do that anyway. But they're, you know, it's like having, you know, that's why they take a, you know, you don't have a belt or shoelaces on your inside, you know what I mean? So I think they're giving him something else, but it's not as strong. So he's not getting what he needs, and it's kind of, he's going through a kind of a cold turkey kind of situation right now, you know. So yeah, hopefully, you know, if they can calm down and he can, maybe he can get access to what he does need, he'll be okay. He'll get through it, you know. But tough situation for him to be in, very tough. So and yeah, that's the latest on that anyway, and it's it shows you the state of the UK at the moment, like, and that, you know, you can't, like, for example, like, Holocaust denial is not illegal in the UK. It's not illegal, but they use two things. They use the Communications Act, which is anything that you say online or on a radio show or on a live stream or anything like that, or even a newspaper or something that's publicly put out there. If you say something that is deemed to be grossly offensive, they can come after you under the Communications Act. That's where they got Alison. And then they also got her, and what they got Graham on was the Public Order Act, because Graham allegedly said things that may incite violence and hatred towards Jews. You see? They couldn't prove it. They just said it. You know? And that's how they get away with it. You know? So they kind of say, yes, you have freedom of speech, but... So you can only say these private, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I saw someone boasting in the UK, oh, we got freedom of speech. No, you haven't, eh? No, you haven't. If they're starting to shut you down. And we in South Africa might be heading into a worse situation as well.
Yeah.
I have to look into a matter that attorneys have warned me about, that we got new hate speech laws. And attorneys have been warning me for more than a year. They've said to me that... that I might not be able to, in their opinion, I won't be able to survive. I won't be able to survive the hate speech laws at all. But, and by the way, I know from behind the scenes that the hate speech laws were written by the Jews. Mm-hmm. Jews wrote them. And, but the government is now, it's sitting in parliament for quite a time, but, my attorney was saying to me that he thinks it can be law within 6 months. So I need to really dig into this fast because they want to get rid of us. So
yeah, yeah.
I've got to make the most of my free speech while I have it.
Well, that's it. And you know, it's you know, it isn't, even if you talk about the Jewish question or the Holocaust or anything like that, right? It's not even that. It's like if you are a COVID denier or climate change denier or any of these things at all that the government or that has put out there, that the government agenda, if you speak out against that and publicly make your views known, they see you then as a threat. And that's how they could get you either under the Communications Act or the Public Order Act, you know. So it's covering everything. This is the thing, everything. You know, so you just cannot speak out now at all, and it doesn't. They don't care what side of the political spectrum you're on. You know, they'll come after you. So that's what we're up against. But you know, the more they push this nonsense at us, the more we'll push back, and there's a lot more of us than there are of them. So that's the way we got to look at it. You know, and sadly, we're going to have people fall by the wayside, like what happened with Graham and Allison, but you know, they did their bit, and so now we've got to step up, you know.
Yeah, there are lots of people who've done as much as it's humanly possible.
We can be careful about what we say. We can still get the message out, but we do, as I said, we do have to be careful how we put it out there. But we can be clever and we can do it, you know. And we can still speak. And as long as we can still speak, we're still forming an opinion, and no one can ever stop you from doing that. No one. I mean, it's what we do naturally. We speak to each other. We form opinions on different things. And nobody has any right to intervene in that and say, you can't say that, I'm dragging you off to jail. Who the hell can do that? You know? Where is that kind of statement? You know, it was attributed, I think it was Oscar Wilde said, is it, I disapprove of what you say, but I will defend to the death your right to say it. What's happened to that? You know? So, here we are. Jan, are you there? Yeah, you're there, yeah.
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, let's go. Okay, before we go to the South African situation, we were talking before we came on air about Afghanistan. What's your opinion on what's going on there? Because that's another crazy situation. Just happened out of the blue, really, didn't it?
I saw some news articles a couple of days ago, because these days I'm trying to follow wars much more, because we got more wars of our own brewing here in Southern Africa. And I spotted stuff about Afghanistan, and I looked at it a couple of days ago. And as I was reading it, it was before the chaos, but and I read it, and I was like looking at the stuff about the Taliban, and I realized, but you know, the Taliban are actually winning like crazy, And they're actually taking over town after town, city after city. And I even saw a thing that I found quite horrifying was a photo of the Taliban with the captured Humvee vehicle. And I was like, no way, man. The Americans are leaving. The Americans are leaving, and they're losing. And as I was reading this, I was starting to point out to people that, and I posted it on my website. I was pointing out to people, but you know, there's a big problem coming here. These guys are winning big time, and now it's just gone crazy. They're on the attack, and they're overrunning things. And this makes me think of Vietnam 1975. In fact, I've just seen a meme about it. Vietnam 1975, the Americans fleeing from, and Joe Biden, of course, asleep on the job as usual. But even Donald Trump, when Donald Trump was saying how he was going to negotiate with them and that it wouldn't be this kind of collapse, the bottom line here is that America has grown tired of Afghanistan. And I also have been thinking about this in more recent years when I noticed they were trying to get Germans and other Europeans to go to Afghanistan. I was thinking to myself, it's like the Americans are tired of of Afghanistan, and they need to find others to go and do some of the dirty work there, and nobody's particularly interested. And of course, you know, the other side of the coin is all of this stuff was from 9/11. Go kill the Muslims. Go kill the Muslims to make Israel happy. And in a certain respect, you know, I felt, you know, when America lost Vietnam and Korea, those were wars that were worth fighting, I think, because they were fighting communism. But these wars for Israel, I don't feel, you know, these wars are wrong. And I thought to myself, well, if Afghanistan is collapsing, that's excellent, excellent. Then it means some of these wars for Israel are falling apart now. And and can you believe? I mean, I just cannot even fathom these numbers that the Americans wasted $1 trillion on these wars. $1 trillion. It's insane. It's just insane. But I will also tell you, Brizer, war and the way war is fought in modern times is bullshit, okay? We whites have been so softened, so weakened, so misled. Our minds have been so fried in the microwave, in the Jewish microwave, that we have lost the will to fight. We've lost the will to stand up for anything. We don't even know the principles by which to win that we used to know 2,000 and more years ago. We are doing things which, if the Romans or the Greeks or our ancient tribes of Celts and Gauls and Germans and Vikings, if they had to see how we go about fighting our enemies and all the conditions and the rules, the stupid liberal Jewish rules and all that, if they had to see how we go about it, they would say, well, you're fucking idiots. You're losing when you shouldn't be losing at all. And I've noticed the American way of war, and I'm telling you, they're doing it wrong. They lack certain of the willpower of the Europeans. And I mean, look at Europe and Britain and how they colonized most of the world. And this was just over 100 years ago. Just over 100 years ago, Europeans controlled like 60% or 70% of the planet. So how did we manage to do it in the age of sailing ships, didn't even have aircraft, etc.? How did we do it then? And now we can't do it. Yet we've got missiles, planes, helicopters, everything. We can't do it now, but we could do it then. No, I'm telling you, I've studied warfare, and I want to tell you, we're doing it wrong. the only reason we're losing, the only reason America's losing and the West has been on a non-stop losing streak since World War II is because we got too many of these, let's call it liberals, whispering in our ears. We're losing, yep, not because we are doomed to lose. We are losing because of the methods. That's what I want to tell you.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I think for the Americans to go into the Middle East, Afghanistan, Iraq, and then all the other, you know, Libya and Syria and all the rest of it, no, we, you know, that was pointless going in there. And of course, as you said, they were serving their masters, who are Israel, on this whole thing. So, and you know, it hasn't worked out in any case for them. But even like Libya was only the one place they managed to get, well, they got rid of Gaddafi, which was a huge mistake. And but now, you know, what happened, what I think what's happening in Afghanistan is just the China are very much involved here, I think. And they have probably funded the Taliban to a point, probably armed them as well, so they can build this Belt and Road project, you know, the old Silk Road right through, which they need to go through Afghanistan to do that. So yeah, I think that's what happened there. It's all very geopolitical. I'd have to, you know, it would take a lot more research to figure out exactly who is behind all of this. But I think I can definitely see the Chinese hand on this without a doubt, you know. And again, who's involved in the whole Chinese side of thing, the Belt and Road thing? Again, the Jews. They're behind it too. That's what they're pushing. And I think it's because the Jews have now seen America, they've used them to the point now where they're dead and gone pretty much. We've sucked them dry. Chinese now, they're the new ones. Let's go then. Let's hit the Chinese now. And, you know, that's my take on it. Any thoughts yourself on that?
The other thing I want to mention about Afghanistan, when America invaded Afghanistan, because America had fought so well in the original war in Iraq in the 1990s with Desert Storm, I was of the opinion at the time that, well, the Americans really know how to clobber people these days, and they've learned how to do it right compared to Vietnam. But at the time, I recall many people were questioning on the internet. They were questioning whether America could beat the Afghans, because the British, I believe, lost to the Afghans in the 19th century. Then there were the Russians who invaded Afghanistan, I think, in the late 70s. And the Americans went and gave, I think it was even the Taliban. It may even have been the Taliban. They armed the opposition to the Russians. And the Americans had a lot of fun watching the Russians take a beating until the Russians pulled out of Afghanistan. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, so people pointed out, you know, the Afghans have beaten a lot of people. Uh-huh. And it may be a miserable place to live, but these are a determined people.
Oh, they sure are.
And they're not exactly the most wonderful warriors, but you know what they got, Graham? Sorry, Brizer, you know what they've got is they've got the will to win, okay? They've got the will to fight. And look at them. They have, and look at this collapse of America now. I mean, this is the worst advert for America since the loss of Vietnam. But there you go. There you go. But you know what? All of this, we got to get out of the liberal system. We got to go back to the way we were. We used to win all the time. We used to win even when we were heavily outnumbered, all of us, even in Africa.
Mm. Yeah. Right. Well, we turn things to South Africa now, and what, you know, things were going on in the last month or so. And, you know, we're getting different types of reports from different people. I had myself and Patricia had Lee Oxley on. By the way, Patricia couldn't make it this evening because her connection isn't great and we wouldn't be able to hear her. So that's why she couldn't make it. But Lee was telling us what she saw was going on. And Jan, you thought that maybe she was, I don't know, over-exaggerating a little bit on certain things. Because well, I don't know what you tell us what do you think your take on what happened when Zuma was he sent to prison, right, and everything kicked off from there.
Well, I don't know what Lee said except for one thing. There was just one thing that Lee said that I told you that this is over the top. And that was when Lee said that the next step is they're going to come and they're going to attack all the police stations and grab the guns. That's what I said to you was over
Oh,
the top.
yeah.
And
Okay, right.
maybe the other thing was the talk of famine. Because initially I myself did worry a bit about whether we would have food, etc. But let me just quickly sketch the scenario of what happened. Basically, what you have is we are looking at the breakup. We are looking at the breakup of the ruling party of South Africa. That's what we are looking at, actually. And this has been going on for a long time. And most whites don't even know about it. I'm probably the only white who actually even monitored and realized some of this when it started. Back in roundabout, I can't remember the exact year, but let's say 2006, 2007, 2008, in that time, what you have in South Africa that's very peculiar that people need to understand the importance of is the ruling party, the African National Congress, is a black political party. It was a peaceful organization that was created well over 100 years ago. And they were peaceful and they just wanted to negotiate with whites for a better situation for themselves. Then, once the communists got involved, the Russians, the Jews, etc., once communism came to South Africa, they then set out to hijack the African National Congress. So they took this like gentle black political party and they put all the communist troublemakers and revolutionaries into it and turned it into a violent organization. And then they created what they called an armed wing for it, and the armed wing is basically an arm. And now this organization, this black tribal organization in South Africa, we've got about nine different tribes in South Africa. And when I say nine different tribes, we've got tribes that speak different languages. They've
Yes.
got different languages and different cultures, okay? And some of them are traditional enemies as well.
Right.
So the ANC is dominated by a tribe known as the Khoza. And the Khoza are the main sort of controllers and thinkers in the ANC.
Hey, that was Mandela's. Mandela was called.
Yes, Mandela's tribe. So they are like the second biggest tribe in South Africa. But the biggest tribe in South Africa are the Zulus, and they're the warrior types. And the Zulus and the Khoisas have themselves had wars in the past. So what happened was during their struggle, can you believe the West German government in the 1960s decided to fund a Zulu prince? And the Germans, I think, were choosing the Zulus because they thought these would be the strongest non-whites in the future, and they were hoping that they would become a dominant force. And their top guy, a guy by the name of Buthelezi, he actually turned into quite a weakling. And he's absolutely useless. But anyway, the Zulus did not want to be part of the communists, and they didn't want to have anything to do with the ANC. So the whites also played on the Zulus and used the Zulus against the ANC in the time of apartheid. And the whites even armed the Zulus, and the Zulus and the ANC killed a lot of each other in a secret civil war that took place in South Africa. But during this time, there was a Zulu by the name of Jacob Zuma who joined the ANC. And he was involved in the intelligence department of the ANC. And Zuma actually moved up through the ranks of this predominantly Khoza organization. And that in and of itself is quite an achievement.
Mm-hmm. Right. You still there, Jan?
Oh, sorry, man. I put my mute on. I apologize.
Oh, no, yeah. So, no. Yeah.
So Zuma rose up through the ranks.
Yeah.
During the war against the whites, and he was a loyal communist, etc. And when Nelson Mandela became the Prime Minister of South Africa, or the President of South Africa, he had two vice presidents. One was Mbeki, I think Mbeki might be a Khoza, and the other one was Zuma. So when Mandela stepped down, Mbeki then became the president, and Zuma was his vice president. And I was the first person to notice and write on my website that there's something weird going on between Mbeki and Zuma. And I began to realize that, and this is like 2006, 2007, 2008, began to realize it's like Mbeki is setting up Zuma to destroy him. And goodness me, the next thing you know, he actually fires his vice president. And it was claims of corruption, blah, 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 blah. But I noticed an interesting thing, and that was that the communists, because there are other communist organizations linked to the ANC that are powerful, the trade unions, etc. One guy in particular, a guy named Vavi of a trade union, communist trade union, he basically turned around and said, we're going to get Zuma back. And the communists and the hardcore lefties, they rallied around Zuma because they saw that Zuma had done nothing wrong. But by the way, Mbeki was very chummy with the Jews. Jews loved Mbeki. They loved him. Okay, so it was probably at the prodding of Jews and liberals and others that Mbeki made this move.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, he fired Zuma. But the ANC, which itself is a communist organization, has got a very weird thing in its rules. And the weird thing, it's an Eastern European thing. It says that the political party deploys its people for other tasks, and they can recall anybody. And so it turns out that the ANC deployed Mbeki as the president, and they could, in theory, recall the president. And the liberals and Jews and everybody, nobody believed this could happen. And they were like, nah, poo-pooing this conspiracy theory. Next thing you know, the blacks get together and all their communist buddies get together at the annual get-together of the ANC, and they recall the president of South Africa. The political party removes the president of South Africa. They fire Mbeki and they put in Zuma. And that knocked the white liberals and the Jews. It knocked them like crazy. They never saw this coming. So then what happened was from 2009, Zuma was the president for the next 8 years or whatever, 8 or 9 or however many years it was, until Ramaphosa came in. And Ramaphosa, in my view, my own conclusion is that Ramaphosa is a black Jew. He's a black who converted to Judaism. Anyway, and again,
do you
I
have
can
any
see
kind of
that,
proof of that, Jan? Do you kind of know? Are you any? Are you, is there any proof that we can see that? Because that's interesting. If that's true, that would have, you know.
I mean, okay.
Is that just your take on it, or what, is he surrounded by a lot of Jewish friends, or what? You know.
Let me explain the Ramaphosa thing, because I did a whole video on this. I did a whole video on this. Explaining why I believe Ramaphosa is a black Jew. Ramaphosa, the first hint that I got long time ago that a black man had converted to Judaism was in the days when I was still talking to my Jewish friend. And my Jewish friend one day said to me, Jan, a very important black man has just converted to Judaism here in Johannesburg. And I was like, oh, really? Okay. I think my Jewish friend was trying to, I think he was kind of boasting, okay? So then I said to him, oh, okay, well, you know, if a black guy is converted to Judaism, okay, who is he? He said, "No, no, no, I can't tell you, I can't tell you." Then on another occasion, we were talking again, because my Jewish friend used to visit me. We'd have cups of tea and coffee and what have you, and we'd talk. And another time he visited me, and he said to me, "Jan, a very important black man has converted to Judaism." Now, just remember, to convert to Judaism is not like converting to Christianity. It's not the same thing as like, oh, I wake up in the morning and I take Jesus as my savior and I'm a Christian and all Christians will accept me as a Christian. Judaism is different, eh? Jews are very, very protective of that religion of theirs, okay? Over that sneaky, sneaky, underhanded religion of theirs. And to become a Jew takes several years. You have to study, you have to pass exams, you have to meet with rabbis. Rabbis have to approve you. They watch you. They assess you. You go. You jump through lots of hoops in order to become a Jew. Hey, this is not for everybody. Jews make sure that they only take in people that they want. They, you know, Jews might say diversity for all white nations, but Jews don't say diversity for Judaism, my friend. They are very, very protective over who they bring into that that secret little cabal of theirs. So when my Jewish friend told me that a very important black had converted, and I kept asking him, I said to him, "Listen, I'm not going to put it on my website," because I had a website then. "Just tell me so I know who the guy is." And he refused. And so then I wondered, you know, who it could be over through the years. I thought maybe it's the head of the Reserve Bank. I thought, you know, that was the first thing. But then much later, I knew about Ramaphosa and I knew what a hardcore commie he was. But he'd also gone out of politics and become a billionaire. And then I began to see the rise of Ramaphosa because I'd been warned by a military, by a general, a former general, a white guy, a Boer. He'd warned me about Ramaphosa. He'd said, "Be careful. If that guy becomes the president of South Africa, the whites are finished." So I watched this Ramaphosa, and then I began to notice how the media is friendly to him. And then when he became president, I saw something I'd never seen before. A Jewish rabbi blessed, and there were photos of this Jewish rabbi blessing Ramaphosa. Never in the history of South Africa has a president been blessed by a rabbi. And from then onwards, I began watching, and then Ramaphosa gave a number of talks, all of them on video. I have all of them on video. If you ever want to watch it, I can send you the link. You can watch the whole thing. You'll see everything. I've got videos. And in these videos, it turns out that there are a number of occasions where the chief rabbi of South Africa meet up with Ramaphosa. And they talk to and they hold events together. So the two of them are there, then the chief rabbi introduces Ramaphosa to all these Jews, and you can see the Jews in the audience, and then he goes and he lauds him, and he speaks so highly of him, and then these two, it turns out they're like personal friends, they visit each other, etc. Then there's a video where Ramaphosa gives a hour-long talk to a Jewish congregation in a synagogue in Cape Town. And he goes on and he talks about the Talmud and how he and the rabbi are studying the Talmud, that the Talmud came into the president's office of South Africa for the first time in its history. He even says, "I want a copy of the Talmud. You know, I'm waiting for my copy." And all those things. And then I found more and more photographs of Ramaphosa among Jews. All these Jews are gathering together at events. They have dinners. And you see all these, quotes, white people, and you see one black man among them. Only one, Ramaphosa.
Wow.
And so every so you see all these Jews, and the only black man who's walking around among them is Ramaphosa. So
Yeah, that kind of
I'm
reminds me of that.
convinced. I'm convinced it's him.
Yeah. Now, when I saw that picture of Nelson Mandela and Winnie Mandela and with Joe Slovo, who was a Lithuanian Jew, and then the communist flag in the background, and they were standing there with their fists in the air, I went, "Oh my God, okay, now things are beginning to make sense, you know." See
And
that?
there's a lot more than that. I
I'm
myself
sure it's a
wasn't
lot
even
more
aware
aware.
of the
That
other
was a
stuff.
very kind of a wake-up moment for me, a real alarm clock call there, but for me when I saw that one, and I went, "Yeah, okay." So yeah, this is interesting stuff. I tell you, Jan, we'll take a little quick music break here, right? And we'll talk more about, again, what you know, what your take of what happened last month, and where you see it all going, because I think this will be very interesting indeed. So yeah, okay, folks, we're going to take a short music break, about 4 minutes or so, just over. This is Joe Jackson, and it's called "Just Because You're Paranoid." Okay, so we'll be back after this.
Get shot just because you're paranoid.
Yeah, there we go, folks. Joe Jackson and Just Because You're Paranoid. I think very much a song for the times there. So our guest tonight, Jan Lamprecht from South Africa, historyreview.com is his website. Welcome back, Jan. So,
hi, Dave.
Right. Okay, last month, when was it? About, say, 6 weeks ago or something like that? 5, 6 weeks ago? But just growing up, what happened with Zuma when he was brought to court? What happened there? And then we'll take it from after that. Like, you know, once the decision was made that he was to go to jail, you know, that's when the things kind of really kicked off. So just give us kind of just bring us up to speed on that. What happened with the court case and why was he brought to court? It was obviously corruption, wasn't it? So just give us your take on that.
Okay, so when Ramaphosa came to power, Ramaphosa also started now apparently investigating corruption. Though Ramaphosa and his brother, by the way, they are billionaires, and they became billionaires very quickly, I must tell you, like in 20 years or less. The Jews literally, let's call it the liberals, literally the white liberals literally handed them huge amounts of money, okay? And there are non-whites who are well aware of their corruption, but you won't see it in the liberal mass media. You won't hear a word about the corruption of the Ramaphosa brothers, okay? And all their nefarious little deeds going on behind the scenes. But anyway, so Ramaphosa apparently now investigated Zuma stuff. Now, you must understand, in Southern Africa, all of these communists, they're all power hungry, and they've all been power hungry from the beginning. They're all busy with all kinds of things. And all of their people in their political parties, people are in on the take on everything, okay? They are raping the system themselves. Anyway, so, you know, the notion that Zuma was this and Zuma was that, maybe he was a bit worse, etc. But for me, I was quite happy. I knew that Zuma was anti-white. Zuma had even done a thing where he sings about "Bring Me My Machine Gun," and whites were quite freaked out by that. But for the most part,
there's hate speech. Zuma, if,
exactly, yeah, and
yeah,
and
course,
and
yeah. But he can get away with it. That's no problem. Yeah.
Julius Malema has openly for years on all the mass media in South Africa, Julius
yeah.
Malema openly called for the killing of whites.
Yeah.
And you know what? Nobody took him to court. When he did go to court, he was never found guilty of hate speech. And no president, no member of parliament chided him on it. Nothing. Okay.
Yeah.
So they can do hate speech. They can openly call for whites to be killed, and it's not hate speech.
That's
okay?
Fine. That's
anyway, fine. You know, that's the double standards. But anyway, the bottom line is that they carried on and on and on, and eventually they were starting to hold hearings, and then the real thing that triggered it was Zuma then began to say there's a conspiracy against me, which is quite correct, because what you've got is you've got the ruling party starting to split now, and the ruling party is starting to split, and they're fighting with each other, and there are factions. And the main split that I see coming out is going to be the Ramaphosa-Zuma split, okay? So anyway, so Zuma didn't want to go to court because he says it's a conspiracy. So basically it was contempt of court, and I think it was in April or so. Anyway, so he didn't go to court, and that is really where the whole thing comes from to arrest him, because it was contempt of court. And Then Zuma supporters and the hardcore ones said no, they won't accept it, that Zuma is to be arrested. They will go to Zuma's home and they'll fight the police. They'll physically fight the police. And that is indeed what they were preparing for. But the government has got people, bodyguards protecting Zuma as a previous president. And so the police and all these, and there are lots of whites involved in all these high security things. Anyway, they worked out a plan and they quickly nabbed Zuma the one day. And they nabbed him and they dragged him off to the police station. The mass media went and said that Zuma handed himself in. My information is that that is not what happened. He was actually grabbed and nabbed and thrown in, handed into the police by the state services. And they did it in such a way that the Zuma supporters couldn't fight the police. So the government now thought that they'd outwitted Zuma and avoided the conflict, okay? But there are hardcore high-level supporters of Zuma, including a black guy who used to be a former ambassador to Japan. So what he did was, so what they did was they began a campaign to release Zuma. And there are war veterans and all kinds of communists. Even there's even a white communist involved in all of this hardcore anti-white bag of shit Afrikaans guy, etc. But anyway, you could see serious communist activity, and they're going to stand up for Zuma. And what they're looking for is they're looking for a way to smack Ramaphosa. So anyway, they are the ones who came up with this notion of this idea to launch this attack. But nobody knew it was coming, okay? People were waiting, oh, there's going to be some violence, maybe some strikes and things. Nobody knew that it was going to be this wave of blacks that was coming. Now, let me just give you a little bit of an insight into something really important here. In all the time of the right wing for the last 20 years that we've been discussing South Africa and the future, you have those whites who believe in the prophecies of Sinner van Rensburg, that Boer prophet, and so forth. And a lot of these people who look into these prophecies, the interesting thing about these prophecies is discussion about whites in cities, and especially in Johannesburg, where I live, where it is stated that at a point there's going to be an enormous strike, and then the blacks are going to come one night and they're going to attack all the whites and they're going to kill all the whites. And so there's a lot of people, especially like that group, the Saidlanders, where they go around and they say all whites must get out of cities because cities are dangerous. Whites will be, when blacks come in masses, blacks will just kill everybody. They'll kill all the whites. All of us will be dead. Now, I investigated this from a military perspective 20 years ago. I started looking into this and I drew the opposite conclusion, that military history shows very clearly that cities are actually a great place to fight and defend yourself, and there's much to be said for it. And any soldier who's gone and done some street fighting will tell you about how difficult street fighting is. That's the hardest type of fighting there is. Anyway, so we've had this debate about whites, and when blacks come and they flood us and they overwhelm us and they overrun us, including in our suburbs, because we mostly live in the suburbs, and they kill us, okay? Mm-hmm. And so I've been the one who's been saying that if that should happen, it's not going to work out like that. There's much to be said for standing and fighting in the suburbs. So I'm giving you this background because this is exactly what sort of what happened with this stuff. The other thing that came out afterwards was what was the purpose of the attack? What were the orders? And why were they doing this? In a nutshell, the blacks, these attacks that took place, these are the most violent attacks in the history of South Africa. This is the greatest damage ever done in the history of South Africa in all of its 400 years of existence. This is the greatest, nastiest thing that's ever been done, other than the Anglo-Boer War, Okay. Other than the Anglo-Boer War, this is the most damage that blacks have ever pulled off, ever. And most of these blacks were Zulus. And most of the action took place down by the coast in what used to be the British colony of Natal. And the capital city there is Durban. The main city is Durban. So the information that came out afterwards was that the blacks were told, they were told that they must go and attack the shopping malls and warehouses, and loot them. And others were sent in to burn them down after they'd been looted. They were then told that once they're finished with that, they must then attack the Indian and white suburbs. Okay?
Right.
So the only thing here that is different to an actual conflict is that the blacks who came and attacked were not all coming with AK-47s. They weren't armed with military weapons.
Mm-hmm.
But there were small numbers of them who did have some kind of weapon, okay? Some kind of firearm, let's say. And others were just coming, you know, with whatever they had, okay? But they were mostly just this mass of blacks, at best with sticks and things, and a tiny portion of them with actual weaponry. Anyway, they came, and they came like a fucking wave, and they just started wiping out these shopping malls and warehouses, and then the arsonists came in and set them on fire. It turned out later that part of the reason for this strategy ties back to what I've told you about Ramaphosa and the Jews, is that these blacks who were fighting, these high-level blacks who were planning this, they said that Ramaphosa's allies are the rich.
Mm-hmm.
And so therefore, this is an attack on the rich. So they first went for the big shopping malls and warehouses and industrial areas to hit the rich, because Ramaphosa's associated with the rich. That's his power base. And they wanted to do that to harm him. So it's a very deliberate thing. And when they came, I discovered these places are protected by security guards. All of these places have got security guards. These are big organizations, corporate organizations, and they're enormous, and they can pay for security. Well, can you believe when the black masses came, the black security guards ran away. They just ran the fuck away. And so the blacks just poured in. They ripped those shops to pieces. I'm about to release a video where I've put together more than 200 videos of the wild stuff that went on. But I've got an even nastier video coming where we're going to focus on the actual killings that took place. Very interesting stuff happened. Bryza, this is the most fascinating thing that's happened in South Africa since black rule. This is the greatest thing that I've seen since I was doing the stuff about Robert Mugabe seizing the farms. This was fantastic. And it gives us such a fabulous chance to see things in action. So anyway, as these blacks went and they tore these businesses to pieces, they fucked them up. They damaged and destroyed between 40 and 45,000 businesses. At least 150,000 people lost their jobs. The damage in U.S. dollars is almost $3.5 billion.
Wow.
And this was done in just a couple of days. In fact, they talk about it being 9 days, but during the 9 days, most of the action took place in about 3 to 4 of the 9 days. Most of the action took place in about 3 days even.
Mm-hmm.
They also hit 90% of the damage was in Natal, and then they did some of it up here in Johannesburg. Mm-hmm. And all that I ever saw and heard was on the Sunday, I just heard a hell of a lot of sirens, a lot more than I've ever heard before. And I thought, this is kind of strange. But I didn't take further notice. And then that evening, I learned that about 13 kilometers from me, the blacks had bust up a place called Hillbrow. So things happened around me, but it didn't happen in any of our white suburbs here. So anyway, what happened was, after they'd finished, and this is where it gets really interesting, the black masses now move in on the suburbs. And in the north of Durban, is a Indian township. Now, another thing about South Africa, as much as they tell you, oh, apartheid this, apartheid that, a lot of the things created under apartheid still exist. The blacks to this day mostly still live in townships.
That's
And
right.
the townships and
Yeah.
suburbs and the suburbs that were allocated to coloureds and Indians have mainly retained their sort of the same population as then. So it turns out that in the north of Durban is a suburb, a township called Phoenix, and 82% of the people in Phoenix are Indians. So the blacks came in large numbers to attack these Indians, but something took place that was unprecedented in the history of South Africa. In fact, in the history of Africa, this has never happened. The blacks and the Indians are in some respects like black Jews. They're all business people, they're all into business, etc. And blacks and Indians have got a racial clash that's very similar to whites and Jews. And these, in Africa and other parts of Africa, blacks have Indians. And in Durban itself, in 1949, the Zulus set out to genocide the Indians. And then the whites came and smashed them into the ground. Okay, but the blacks and Indians have got a very nasty dynamic, and blacks have either killed them or chased them out or thrown them out in Africa, right? So what took place in Phoenix is unprecedented in the history of Africa. It is the first time ever that Indians came with weapons and Indians killed the blacks. They now call it the Phoenix Massacre. The government's trying to pretend it didn't happen and they're trying to bring the numbers down. But at least 50 blacks were shot dead, were killed by Indians, either by gunfire or even with machetes. And they were even cutting them up. And I even have film footage where the Indians burned down a shanty town, shacks of the blacks. They went and set fire to the black shacks. And there was quite hectic fighting. Then there was another place, Chatsworth. The blacks managed to kill very roughly, because the numbers aren't exact. As far as we know, something like 342 people died in those 9 days. Of the 342 who died, about five were Indians, none were whites. I repeat, none were whites, and the rest seemed to be blacks. The vast majority of the deaths were all blacks. No whites were killed, and no whites were injured.
Yeah, I
And
mean,
the
I heard
Indians.
there was quite a lot of deaths, but I think it was that high. I think it was 342. That's a lot of people.
Yeah. 342 is the last count that I've heard. And that's official, hey? That's official.
Right.
So
Or it could be even more.
342, yes, you never know. You never know what happened. So anyway, it turns out that the Indians had security companies, had neighborhood watches, and they fought the blacks and they killed the blacks. There were Indians whose houses were being burned down. They were calling for help. Other Indians raced to help them. So this has opened up a whole new dynamic. But let me move on. So the first thing that happened is the Indians managed to defend their suburbs. They took some hits, but not badly, and they killed a bunch of blacks. That this is unprecedented, never before happened in Africa, ever, anywhere in Africa south of the Sahara. This has never happened. So this was a totally new thing. Then they tried to get to the white suburbs, and the white suburbs, they weren't able to get in. Mm-hmm. And the whites were, I've heard different things from different people, but one guy in Durban that I spoke to, he's said to me that the Afrikaners, they were out there first, and they were already busy blocking off roads immediately. The whites, the rest of the whites, the English-speaking whites and Indians followed, and he told me that for 5 days and nights, the whites blocked off all the roads to Durban and the suburbs, and there were small white security companies also blocked the blacks, stopped them from going further south and causing more damage, saving the rest of Natal, etc. But the whites quickly came, blocked the roads. Some were armed. People came out with whatever they had, guns, pistols. He said to me, baseball bats. He said to me, he even saw somebody with a golf club. And, you know.
Yeah, anything
happened. So they went and they freaking, anything. They create these barricades, and then... Then he said to me that Indians and whites who had trucks were also bringing other things to form barricades. He said there was an Indian who even brought concrete blocks. They came and chucked concrete blocks off trucks in order to form barricades to stop the blacks coming down the roads. I've got video footage where whites have got a chainsaw and they saw down a tree and the tree falls across the road, mm-hmm. so that the blacks, when they come to loot, they can't take anything away. So and the whites, you hear white guys saying basically almost like, fuck you, now you can't get in, you know. Yeah. And you know, so when it came to protecting their property, the whites came out in force, man. They came out and for 5 days and nights, they blocked the roads. The guy I spoke to in Durban, he was saying to me that people were, whites and Indians were coming around giving people food. He said it's the first time he's ever had free food in the day or the night. There were also times where whites and Indians worked together and they went and they fought and they shot at blacks. Now just understand this. The 342 who died is not many. If the whites and the Indians had just gone and just shot in order to kill, the death toll would have been 10 times higher. But in South Africa, you've got to be careful. You can only shoot if your life is in immediate danger, etc. So the rules are very tight. You can't just shoot at anybody at any time. Yeah. One guy I spoke to said to me that the only time that people started using, the main time when people started using live ammunition was when blacks were starting to set things on fire. Right. That is when they started to shoot to kill.
Yeah, well, that's self-defense right there. That's like your property is under attack. So, you know, you're defending your property. And of course, you know, next thing would be you're defending your life. But, you know, that is self-defense right there. So you're perfectly entitled to do it. That's a God-given, unalienable right.
So you see, and I must tell you, other stories that came out were whites buying up ammunition. One buddy of mine, and by the way, I'm still investigating. I've still got a couple of people I need to phone in order to get more information. I've not finished my investigation yet.
Right.
But among the things that I have heard so far is one buddy was telling me that a pal of his in Natal bought 300,000 rands worth of ammunition in one day. Now that in US dollars is over 20,000 US dollars worth of ammunition to buy in one day. That's a lot of money. So he said this guy bought that amount of ammunition and other whites were coming and buying it from him all in one day. It was bought and sold in one day. They ran out of ammunition also, and then somebody bought ammunition from Johannesburg, which is hundreds of kilometers away. You're talking like 600 kilometers away. They chucked it on a the plane, flew down to Durban and landed on a racetrack, and that's how they got their ammunition. Okay, so and another story I heard was some white guys were at one of their roadblocks. Along comes another white guy on a motorbike. White guy on a motorbike says to them, "Hey, do you guys have enough ammunition?" And they said, "Yeah." And he said, "Well, anyway, here's some for you." And he chucks a whole box of 12 gauge shotgun ammunition at them, and he dashes off. So whites, the whites, how did the whites know that the attack was coming? That's another thing. There was no warning, but because the whites are so used to crime, and we've got so many procedures for monitoring crime, that they realized things were happening due to the crimes that were being reported. And as the crimes and the crime messages were going out of all proportion, people then realized, things are going to hell. And within a day, the whites were doing their thing. And like I say, the only damage that whites did suffer that I know is the blacks may have burned anything from between 45 and 100 big trucks. There are lots. There are quite a few whites who've got trucking companies because of the collapse of the railways, and the blacks had started stopping the big trucks and setting them on fire some days before, actually. So truckers suffered a lot of damage. Most whites don't have shops in the malls. To have a shop in the mall, you've got to be liberal. Very few whites actually have shops in the malls. So there were some whites who lost their shops. Things like a gun shop would be white-owned. So there were some whites who suffered damage, but mostly it's the big corporates, all the big corporates, chain stores, and stuff who lost in those areas. The blacks did try to set fire to farms. They've been doing that a lot in the last couple of years. And they set fire to some farms, and I did hear of one farmer and his family who had to be airlifted by helicopter. But the beautiful thing that came out of this is, and people who saw it, they said the blacks were swarming all over it. And when I put out the video later in the next couple of hours, you'll see it. The blacks were swarming all over the show. They were coming in vast numbers. And despite that, the whites, to my knowledge, no whites' houses were burned down, no whites were killed, no whites were even injured. And these blacks who were shot, like I say, people didn't just shoot for nothing. And another thing is whites and Indians were also using paintball guns and things. Police were using lots of rubber bullets. So some of the deaths were actually from rubber bullets and things. There were quite a number of deaths from blacks who were fleeing when they hear the shooting. The blacks run, and some blacks ran straight into highways. So as they run onto the road, a car hits them and kills them. And then there were instances where blacks were murdered by other black criminals who stole from them. This is the closest thing we've had to a war, and the beautiful, beautiful thing, the beautiful thing was how the whites protected their suburbs, how even the Indians protected their suburbs.
Yeah,
What
that's
will
pretty
come
cool.
out of this? I must tell you that I think out of this we're going to get a whole new dynamic that's never been seen before in South Africa. Indians, suddenly Indians and blacks are now enemies. This has never been seen before, and
And they
now
were
the
quite
blacks.
close, weren't they? Yeah, and the Indians and the blacks were quite, particularly in the anti-apartheid stuff going on back in the day. I remember a lot. There was a lot of Indians on board with that, you know. And but I remember being in, when I was in South Africa in 2013, and I was in Cape Town, and I met an Indian guy who was down there, and he had absolutely no time for black people at all. He hated them worse, even. I think I didn't hear any rhetoric as bad from any white person. And then I met someone who was of Malay origin, a lot of Malaysian people who settled in the Cape as well. And he was the same. So I was really taken aback by all of this, you know. So everything isn't going to plan. The Rainbow Nation is beginning to fall apart a bit, isn't it?
Absolutely. Now the coloureds, you talk about the Malays. The Malays are part of like the coloured set. And the coloured see themselves as superior to blacks. Mm-hmm. And they associate more with whites. The whites and the coloureds have got a much more traditional alliance that goes back a long time. We have even the Boers and coloureds have even fought blacks in the past, in past wars. So that thing can happen. But you're right. Most of the Indians were drawn into the anti-apartheid movement. Rich Indians were using their businesses and even their sugarcane plantations to allow the blacks to learn communism. And now the blacks are attacking them. So this whole Rainbow Nation bullshit is falling apart, and it's beautiful. It's beautiful. And this black Indian thing, this is going to be something. And the blacks are very irritated by the fact that Indians have shot them. I reckon out of this, what I don't see any new big attacks coming, okay? There are military reasons why you're not going to see anything big happening anymore from this. But what can come from this is maybe strikes. But longer term, you can get low-intensity warfare. You can get murder. You can get murder and assassination. Pardon me, I just want to sneeze.
Okay. Well, that's the COVID, John.
The COVID is making me sneeze, and
it's
kind of coming and going, and I'm not really sneezing.
Yeah.
So anyway, I want to tell you that this thing has got so many kinds of potential here. The one thing is now blacks and Indians, big problem there. The other thing is Zulus. Long time ago, when I started my websites, when I started my original African Crafts website, I'd not been going for long. I got contacted by young Zulus, and young Zulus wanted to talk to me because they were very impressed with the blacks in Zimbabwe who were against Mugabe. So I met with these young Zulus, one of whom had already won an election on behalf of the ANC. He'd already actually got a seat. And the young Zulus told me a strange story. They said to me, there is a conspiracy. There's a conspiracy in the ANC. A Zulu can never become the president. Oh. And they told me this like in about 2001, 2002. Mm-hmm. So this is before the Zuma affair. And then, of course, Zuma becomes the president. But look at how Zuma's been treated and how he was driven out and how they attacked him. Mm-hmm. So I want to tell you that the Zuma thing can even lead to maybe Zulu secession one day. If there's one group of blacks who are likely to want to secede from South Africa, it's the Zulus. So all this Zuma stuff can still turn into a Zulu thing. And when they launch their attacks, the aim was to launch them across the country, but 80 to 90% of it took place in Natal, and the other 10% took place in Johannesburg. And actually in Johannesburg, like where I live and the places I drive to, no whites even hassled. I was even out taking photos on the day of the worst violence, and I saw nothing. And everybody was going about their work. In fact, it was only last week that I actually decided to drive around to places where I might see burned buildings, and I eventually had to go all the way into a township to get film footage.
Right.
Because even in the townships, it wasn't that common. But Natal and Durban, that's where the action was. And Natal and Durban is where the majority of the Zulus live.
That's right.
So this is a Zulu thing. It's a Zulu thing. So out of this, all those people who've said, oh, like you say, Rainbow Nation, blah, 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 forget all of that. When everything breaks down, it eventually breaks down according to race. And that even means according to tribe, according to color, exactly the way whites have predicted. But for me, the big thing was how the whites and even the Indians were able to defend themselves against the blacks. That
yeah,
was astounding.
I think that's kind of interesting, Jan, isn't it? Because would I be correct in saying the Battle of Blood River, was that was in Natal, wasn't it? Am I correct on that?
It was it was further south in Natal, yes.
Yeah.
And that too was a Boer Zulu thing.
Yeah, that was, if you know the history of that battle, that was an amazing battle that the Boers won against marauding hordes of Zulus. I mean, thousands upon thousands, and yet about, what, how many of them, a couple of hundred Boers defended themselves. So is there some kind of spiritual intervention coming on here, you know, that there's something in, well, the Boer blood, the white blood, or something in South Africa, we're saying, right, we looked to that, we got through that one. I mean, how the hell they got through that one, it was quite amazing. The most amazing story, I think, ever, if you want to look at a battle. I mean, incredible stuff, right? How the white people, or the Boers there, defended themselves and beat them off. And here we are again. Similar thing, obviously not as big, you know, not as the same size or anything like, but it's the same thing, isn't it? That kind of, right, we'll defend our property, our people, our families. That's it.
Yes. And, you know, in South Africa, there have been wars between blacks and whites over centuries. The Battle of Blood River is just the most famous one. But there have been many, many battles between blacks and whites spread over hundreds of years. And in fact, the correct way to look at Blood River is that before Blood River, the whites had actually, some whites had moved to the north of Natal, and they struck a deal. They wanted to live and occupy the north of Natal. This was before the British took over Natal. And the Boers were living there, and the Boers were trying to strike a deal with the Zulus. The Zulus killed all the Boer leaders, and then the Zulus unleashed all the Zulu warriors, and they killed all the people in those settlements. They killed something like, I think it was 186, they massacred 186 whites. This is before Blood River. And so Blood River was actually a special group of whites, of Boers. Mm-hmm. It was like a private military army, actually. It was like a private military force gathered together by the Boers to go back to that area where the Boers had been killed and to avenge them. Mm-hmm. They were going to fight the Zulus, and they were deliberately looking for the Zulu army. And mm-hmm. that is what the Blood River was about. That was the revenge for the prior massacres. So, you know, these things, and after Blood River, by the way, there's funny stuff that happened after Blood River. The Boers actually... The Boers actually did some king making. They found a Zulu who was willing to be friendly to them. He then gathered his Zulus, and the Boers and those Zulus fought the other Zulus, and the Boers crushed them, and they put in a new Zulu chief who was Boer friendly. And while they were busy with it, they stole something like, I think, 40,000 cattle from the Zulus. There are lots of things that happened. And the Boers were rocking. You know, that whole Blood River thing, the Boers were rocking. They were angry. And I want to tell you, when these Boers were angry, they did all kinds of awesome stuff. That was them at their finest. And that's what you need. So, yeah.
Yeah, just
And
a comment there
things.
from Fake Warren, the Charter, says the Brits also did pretty well against thousands of Zulus at Rorke's Drift, as depicted in the film Zulu. And that's true.
Yes, brilliant.
That film now would be deemed as highly offensive now.
Can you believe it? It's insane. It's insane the level of censorship now, hey? It's insane. You can't talk about. These are my websites, historyreview.com, africancrisis.info, and white-shop.biz. This is my attempt to try and do some Jew-free trading and experimenting with the next level of stuff. So, thank you very much for listening. We'll be chatting again soon. Take care of yourselves.